We have two matters on the docket this morning. The first case is Mahaney against the City of Inglewood, and I assume council on table or our tables are on that case. The second matter is, in the interest of BC and WC, our council present in that case. All right. We have read the briefs in these cases. At least one of us has been into the record. We're familiar with the facts, and I hope that will help you in streamlining your presentation. Need not recite facts to begin with. I would ask that people turn off their cell phones and pagers so that our argument is not interrupted. As you know, you get 15 minutes per side, and the yellow light comes on when there's 5 minutes remaining for purposes of planning rebuttal for appellants. With that request and advice, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'm Tom McDonald, appearing on behalf of the plaintiff appellant Michael Mahaney. Mr. Mahaney faces criminal prosecution for painting two murals, one on each side of his building. The first is a scene from Alice in Wonderland, and the second is a portrait of four musicians. He's been charged with three separate counts of violating the sign code, each of which carries the risk of a year in jail and up to a $1,000 fine. He filed this lawsuit to challenge the constitutionality of the provisions under which he's been charged and for a declaratory judgment that the murals constitute a work of art as that term is defined in the code.
Someone here apparently came to the conclusion that these two paintings were not works of art.
Yes, the city argued that they, because although the definition of work of art includes a mural, in fact, the definition of work of art is an original creation, including, among other things, a painting, either fixed or permanent, as in the case of a mural, as the actually expressed language of the definition of work of art. Nevertheless, the trial court held that it was not a work of art because there was a separate provision of the sign code that limited works of art to one particular zoning district, which this property was in, and required a discretionary approval of a signage plan by the city manager before a work of art could, before a mural could be posted.
Yeah, I thought that the trial court really didn't reach that issue. The trial court determined that it might be a work of art, but that it, more importantly, it was a mural and therefore subject to the code.
Yes, she found that there was an inconsistency between the two provisions of the code, one of which exempted works of art from the regulations and the other of which imposed the stricter requirements upon murals.
And what I was referring to is that apparently somebody at the city determined that this was not a work of art because they cited Mr. Mahaney for violation of the code.
Yes.
Had it been a work of art, he'd be exempt.
That is correct.
And isn't the question of whether or not it's a work of art a question of fact?
It is a question of fact.
Okay.
Well, what is your response, counsel, to the trial court's judgment that the ordinances of which you speak are in conflict and that the ordinance regarding a wall mural and the special review process is one which is more onerous or more strenuous and should be the one that's enforced or followed in this case?
Your Honor, I think the court was wrong to find that they are in conflict because the permit requirement itself, which is in subsection D of the code, expressly states, except as provided in subsection E, which is the provision that contains the exemption for works of art, says except as provided in subsection E, a permit, you know, nobody shall erect a sign without obtaining a permit. So there's no conflict because the permit requirement itself specifically refers to the exemption.
And let me ask you this, I want to back up just a little bit too. Is there anything in the record that indicates whether or not Mr. Mahaney was aware of any of the sign code provisions prior to having the murals painted on his building? In other words, did he act based upon the provision in the code that works of art are exempt?
There's no evidence in the record to that effect, Your Honor. In granting summary judgment to the city, the trial court made several fundamental mistakes and ignored binding precedent. All of these are addressed at length in our brief. In my limited time today, I want to focus on just three mistakes. First, wrongly imposing the burden of proof upon Mr. Mahaney rather than upon the government. Second, treating the regulations as content neutral rather than content based. And third, ignoring binding precedent, which prohibits the regulation of communicative aspects of signs. Modern sign code jurisprudence starts with the 1981 decision of the United States Supreme Court in the Metro Media case. Shortly thereafter, in the same year, the Colorado Supreme Court decided the Colfax Unlimited case, ruling that the city of Lakewood's sign code was unconstitutional due to a number of provisions which imposed different degrees of regulation based upon the content of signs. The trial court, following the lead of the city's briefs, ignored those two cases and instead relied upon two earlier cases which predated Metro Media. Neither of the earlier cases, Veterans of Foreign War versus Steamboat Springs or Williams of Denver, even involved a claim of content-based regulations. And the Steamboat Springs case, which the trial court relied upon with respect to the burden of proof, expressly stated that it was applying the burden of proof applicable to zoning laws in general. While later in the opinion it acknowledged a First Amendment aspect of the claim, it never changed the burden of proof. Much more recently, in the Denver Publishing Company versus City of Aurora, the Colorado Supreme Court case, court held that once a plaintiff has shown that an ordinance affects speech, the burden of proving the ordinance constitutional rests with the government. This holding follows the U.S. Supreme Court case of Discovery Network, which was also decided after the Steamboat Springs case. These cases must be viewed as modifying the holding of Steamboat Springs as to the burden of proof. And even Steamboat Springs acknowledged that a sign code affects speech. Therefore, the decision to place the burden upon Mr. Mahaney rather than the government was contrary to the binding precedent of Denver Publishing Company. And this error was not a harmless error. It affected all other aspects of the trial court's decision. And this is so because under the test for either a content-neutral or a content-based regulation, the government still must make an affirmative showing to justify regulations affecting speech. No such showing was made in this case. The second fundamental mistake made by the trial court in its holding was that the regulations in question were content-neutral regulations. In Colfax Unlimited, the court found that the entire Lakewood sign code to be unconstitutional because its provisions discriminated based upon content. To quote the court, "A vice of these provisions is that they submit different subcategories of ideological expression identified by content to different degrees of regulation." Elsewhere in the opinion, it made it clear when it used the term ideological expression, it was referring to all non-commercial speech. The Inglewood sign code provisions relating to murals also impose different degrees of regulation based upon different subcategories which are identified by content. The trial court's error stemmed from considering only size, number, and permit requirements generally, while ignoring the more onerous restrictions imposed upon murals as opposed to wall signs or works of art. For example, the trial court analyzed the permit requirement of Section D1 as it applied to most signs, ignoring both its exemption and the additional more onerous requirements applicable to murals. Colfax Unlimited held that a permit requirement was unconstitutional because it contained exemptions for many of the same categories that are exempted by subsection E of the Inglewood sign code, including flags, decorations, and religious symbols. Colfax Unlimited said that those exemptions were content-based regulations, which rendered the permit requirement unconstitutional. Consider, if you will, in this case, that on the wall where Mr. Mahaney painted the four portraits, he could have painted a Christian cross, a Jewish Star of David, a Muslim crescent, and a Hindi symbol, and all would have been exempted from the permit requirement as religious symbols. And because they're symbols rather than pictures, they would have been classified as wall signs rather than wall murals. And this distinction between wall signs and wall murals is an additional reason why the permit requirement is content-based.
Mr. Johnson, let me stop you there.
Okay.
If these were, you say they're exempt from the permit requirement, or are they exempt from the regulation entirely? You say in your brief that if it's a work of art, it's exempt from the permit requirement. I assume that by that clearly it says it's exempt from obtaining a permit, but is it also exempt from size and numerical regulation?
Your Honor, the city in its 30B6 deposition testified that they do not regulate either the size or number of works of art. So there's an express limitation in the code from the permit requirement, but the testimony of the city in its 30B6.
And the only evidence we really have of that is that deposition, because if you read the code itself, it does appear that they could regulate size and number, even though it's a work of art.
Well, even with respect to numbers, it says that the exemption provision says that those signs are in addition to all other signs permitted in a sign code area. So I think it would also be exempt from the number regulation.
And then you also just momentarily ago drew a distinction between wall signs and wall murals, if I understood you correctly.
Yes, sir.
If I understand the definitions right, a wall mural is on the side of the building and a wall sign is on the front of the building. That seems to be one of the major differences.
No, Your Honor, a wall sign can be on the side of a building. A wall sign is any sign. A wall sign can be both a painted sign or a mounted sign, but mm-hmm. it's a sign painted on the wall of a building. And it doesn't limit it to the front of the building.
Excuse me, counsel. Let me interrupt a minute and go back on your content neutral argument and go back a little bit prior to that. If this court were to determine that the permitting system that applies to, or process that applies to wall murals is in fact a prior restraint and that there is no time limit within which the city manager has to approve or disapprove the permit application, would the court have to then address whether or not the regulations are content neutral or content based?
Certainly would not have to address whether the permit regulation was content neutral. It would be sufficient. That would be sufficient to strike it as an impermissible prior restraint. I think the court would still be faced with addressing the number and the size regulations as to whether they were content neutral or content based.
Thank you.
And let me jump to the size regulation. The city has testified that it does not regulate the painting of patterns on a wall of the exterior side of the building. Specifically, the city testified that an owner could test paint a bright polka dot pattern on the side of a building or paint it with brightly colored borders, and each would not be regulated under the sign code. So the undisputed evidence in this case established that the city regulates some patterns painted on the side of the building and does not regulate other patterns, the only difference being the content of the pattern. If the city deems the pattern to be a work of art, or to be an unregulated pattern, it is not subject to the regulations. If it deems the pattern to be words, letters, symbols, or designs, it's regulated as a wall sign, in which case Mr. Mahaney could have had five rather than one on his location, and he could have had up to 442 square feet as opposed to 100, limited to 100 square feet. And if its city deems it to be a picture, it's subject to more stringent regulation as a mural. These are content-based distinctions that cannot withstand strict scrutiny. The city has not made the argument that their regulations satisfy strict scrutiny, have not identified any compelling governmental interest. And the size regulation highlights another problem with the sign code. The Metro Media case involved billboards, and the court emphasized that billboards are physical structures, and because they're physical structures, the government can regulate the non-communicative aspects, but it's cautioned that, quote, the First and 14th Amendment foreclose a similar interest in controlling the communicative aspects. As applied to murals, the sign code is not regulating any physical structure. The city acknowledges that it does not regulate the painting of exterior walls. There's no structural or material difference between a wall painted solid gray and a brick wall painted with a scene from Alice in Wonderland. The sole difference is the communicative aspect of the picture. And both Metro Media and that, and the same line is repeated by Colfax Unlimited, state that the First and 14th Amendment foreclose any interest in regulating the, this communicative aspect. I have just a minute. I'd like to reserve it for rebuttal.
All right, Mr. McDonald.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Nancy Reed, bar number 10664, and I represent the appellee, the City of Englewood. I'm here to ask that this court find that the district court's findings were correct, findings in order were correct, and should be upheld.
Ms. Reed, shouldn't Judge Post have decided whether this was a work of art or not?
Judge Post did not decide whether it was a work of art because the testimony and the argument is that if the Englewood sign code, and I believe the testimony of Ms. Langdon's deposition was that something which might be a work of art might also be subject to the sign code by virtue of what it exists at the time. For example, I believe the testimony was is that something which might in theory be a work of art, a sculpture, if it had a big arrow on it that pointed at a restaurant called Joe's and said "Eat at Joe's," it might also be a sign. In this particular case, what she found was that there are certain things which might be works of art which wouldn't be subject to the permitting system. However, if they fit into the category which was articulated in the code, in the zoning code, then they were in fact subject to the zoning code. Those things which might be works of art, which also were could be defined as a wall mural, a wall sign, anything of that nature, would then be subject to the permitting requirements.
How is that? I'm having a difficult time understanding how that could occur when the municipal code says that works of art are exempt. What pulls that picture, that painting back into the regulations of the sign code after the code has said it's exempt if it's a work of art?
The fact that it is a mural itself that is painted on a wall, on the exterior wall of a building, according to the code, the argument is that because it's painted on the exterior part of a building, because it, then it should be limited in size, and that's part of the restrictions on the, in the sign code for the government interests of traffic, aesthetics, and that sort of thing. The same item, if it were smaller, the same picture, be it mural or whatever that Mr. Mahaney has on his wall, if it were smaller, he could have the same picture. It's not the content. It is the size and the location on the exterior wall of a primary building.
Well, here's what the city's representative said. In response to a question, is it the city's position that a work of art, even though it doesn't require a sign permit, is still subject to the size limitations? The answer was, as a work of art, no. So I think the city has taken the position in sworn testimony that size doesn't matter.
Well, I think based on the totality of the testimony of the city's witnesses, that it does matter. It does matter because if you have a picture which might be a work of art, which also falls under the category of it is in a place, manner, and size in which it could be considered a wall mural, then it's under the subject of the subject to the sign code. If it is a work of art, if it's the Mona Lisa and it fits under the category of a wall sign, then it can be permitted and have size and place limitations on it as a wall sign.
Does the city concede that these paintings are works of art, however, they are subject to the permitting process, special review process, because they are also wall murals? Or does the city take the position that these are not works of art?
All right, the city has taken the position that they are wall murals. The city has not said whether they are works of art or not. The city's position is that the sign code and the city enforcement of the sign code is not based on content.
Well, doesn't, it seems to me that the city would have to take a position one way or the other, that either these are works of art and they're subject to the sign code regulations because they are also wall murals, or they are not works of art. Who makes that decision? Who makes the decision whether the paintings are works of art?
The city manager, the administration of the city, makes the determination about whether or not they fall under the code.
And what standards does that city manager have available to make that decision?
The standards that are listed in the sign code, which would be the placement, size, limitation, and number.
And the city, it's the city's position, I think, from the briefs that I've read, that the city asserts that these paintings are wall murals. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so the city is conceding that these paintings do not directly or indirectly advertise or call attention to any product?
Yes. The
if I painted the side of the building camouflage and I had for sale Army surplus goods, would that be a sign that reflected the content?
Yes, it would.
And so if I have pictures of scenes from songs that promote drug use on the side of my building, and the content of the building is drug paraphernalia, does that sign, do those paintings reflect content?
In this particular case, no. The code enforcement officials found that Mr. Mahaney's the object of Mr. Mahaney's business, per his statement, is smoking supplies, not drug paraphernalia. Also, there is the fact that it's a sign because it does draw attention. It does draw attention to the building. And as I noted, I may have misspoken about the fact that a work of art in no way, the definition escapes me at the moment, but it in no way promotes a product. These items, these wall murals, promote Mr. Mahaney's business. Mr. Mahaney did not put these murals on the wall for purposes of art.
But you just...
Mr. Mahaney's... Oh, excuse me.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, counsel. I didn't mean to...
That's all right. Mr. Mahaney's statement, his affidavit, says that this is purely a business reason why he put these murals on the wall. In his affidavit, he states that, let's see, that the graffiti has been... He had graffiti problems, that the graffiti had been costly and time-consuming burden to me and my business. He says... Generally, graffiti artists will not tag over another artist's work. Accordingly, I decided to hire a professional to paint murals on my building.
Excuse me, counsel, now I'll ask the question. Then it appears to me that these paintings could not be wall murals because they would, under what you're saying right now, call attention to a product. And wall mural is defined as a picture painted on any exterior wall that does not directly or indirectly advertise or call attention to a product.
Call attention to any product. I admit it is a very fine definition, in that a work of art does not call it it is a wall mural, but no, just a moment. May I have a moment,
sure.
Your Honor? We would say then, based on the fact that Mr. Mahaney's argument is that he has smoking paraphernalia in his business, that the wall mural does not directly call attention to his product.
I'll ask one more question, then let you get on to your argument. If, in fact, these pictures are wall murals, does the city concede that they are subject to the special review process for obtaining a permit, which requires the city manager's approval?
Yes.
And does the city concede that in that process, there is no time limit within which the city manager has to make a decision?
No. There is a time limit specifically.
What is that time limit?
The time limit specifically is in the policy. When they adopted the South Broadway sign area, specific sign area policy for that area, the purpose was to give, because it was an economic problem in that area, they wanted to give special emphasis and do things in that area that they wouldn't let them do anywhere else in the city, such as blinking signs and that sort of thing, and wall murals. And that provides that the policy is, in a standard sign, there's a 5-day review by staff. In this particular sign, because these are extra special signs that are not allowed other places, it provides for review by the city manager or his designee, who at this time is the director of community development. And they have developed it. That was not articulated in the sign code, but it provided for a policy to be established. And I believe the testimony in the evidence, there's a memo from Mr. Darren Hollingsworth, which sets out what that policy is. And that policy is that the city manager or designee has 45 days in which to come up with a decision. And after that time, whether it is granted or denied, it is there is an appeal process, which is the same as the appeal process for any other sign in the city. So there is, in fact, a time frame. It is not a unilateral decision on his part without any time frames. Regarding the burden of proof,
let me ask you this then: what criteria does he apply in whether to approve the sign or not? Is that in writing someplace? Is that in the same memo?
I believe it's in the same memo. The burden of proof articulated by the trial court. The trial court did use the VFW versus Steamboat Springs test for articulating the bearer of the burden of proof. However, this is not fatal. I'm arguing that this is not fatal to the district court's decision. A review of the evidence shows that the city's evidence was sufficient to sustain the required burden of proof even under Denver Publishing Company. The city has met the burden. According to the Denver Publishing Company test, the statute was narrowly drawn. It was tailored for purposes of traffic and protecting the public against the proliferation of signs, which was approved in the VFW case. It was not an impermissible burden on the free speech right of people who wish to erect wall murals or any other signs. He can erect that wall mural. He can erect wall signs. They are just limited as to signs. It's not the entire building. He has 100 square feet in which to put that same message, that same picture, the same mural.
Is the criteria different if it's a wall sign versus a wall mural in terms of the number and size? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
What rational distinction is there between differentiating between a wall sign and a wall mural?
The code says that a wall mural covers the entire wall. A wall sign is one that has certain limits, in that it may not cross a door, it may not cross a window. It has certain sign limitations. You can have more than one wall sign, but it has size limitations, and a wall mural may go across.
Let me ask you, what governmental interest is served by having these distinctions between wall signs and wall murals, or what angle would governmental interest is served?
The governmental interest is based back on the proliferation of signs. By limiting the size, of these kinds of signs, the distraction for traffic or the enormity of the signs are not as difficult.
So you could have multiple signs on the wall, but the wall, which can cover the whole wall, but the mural has to be a little
No, they
smaller.
Can't cover the whole wall. The wall signs are also limited in total size. You might have two wall signs or three wall signs, but they are still limited in size.
In aggregate size.
In aggregate size, yes, Your Honor. They may not cover the entire building either. And again, the reason that the issues regarding wall murals versus wall signs are that wall signs are allowed all in all the B1 and B2 areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Reed.
Mr. McDonald?
Thank you. I'd just like to point out, in response to Judge Hawthorne's questions concerning whether there is a time limit with respect to the city manager's approval of murals, I disagree with the answer of counsel as to whether there is, that we believe there is not one. But more importantly, the trial court, in ruling on the prior restraint ruling, did not rely upon a time limit found in the policy. It relied upon the time limit set forth in Section D of the code, which is the 5-day time limit, which is expressly does not apply to signs which require city approval by the city manager. With respect to Judge Richmond's questions concerning the definition of a wall mural and the difference between a wall mural and a wall sign, the definition of a wall mural is a picture painted on any exterior wall of a principal building. It does not require that it cover the entire wall. It does not make a distinction between whether it covers the entire wall or only a portion of a wall. And finally, I guess I'm out of time.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay, I was going to say, finally, I think Judge Hawthorne's questions with respect to the difference between a wall mural and work of art emphasize why this provision is also unconstitutionally vague. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Thank you again, Ms. Reed. The matter is submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. Council on interest of BCWC may set up, and when you're ready, sir, you may proceed. No rush.